Welcome to The Substation, a podcast where we hope to explain energy economics. This is a small interlude, which we're going to call the Buzz Bar. Haha, see what we did there. And this is intended to be a short episode, which we originally recorded that was meant to be an introduction to another episode, but became an unanticipated kind of episode length discussion. So please enjoy this brief interlude into a revenue asset-based funding structure for new nuclear power stations. And this was kind of meant to be our first reaction to the news about it. So it's mostly us trying to explain to each other what RAB is. But we thought it was elucidating and relatively entertaining. And we hope to be able to look at it in a bit more detail at another time. We're going to talk about a bit of news. Is that the government has published the legislation, or started off the publication of the legislation for the RAB, the regulated asset-based model for financing nuclear power stations in the UK. What's RAB, Emma?
I was going to say, my question was going to be, why is that exciting? Or what is RAB? Well, I can give you my... Well, RAB stands for regulated asset base. So it is one way of funding assets. This was typically for... say natural monopolies or transmission systems where there isn't a competitive market or a sufficiently liquid or sufficiently competitive market to be able to have competition determine the right price. So instead we say we're going to need to regulate the price, and we're going to do that based on the asset base.
Well, it's basically how you finance and govern networks, right? Because you've got one network. We need to have certainty over how we're going to fund and recover the money for it. I think this would be the first time it's been applied to generation technology in the history of the liberalised energy market in GB. But historically, nuclear power stations have either been unfinanceable or they've been, like Hinkley, financed under a CFD, a contract for difference. This is a scheme where you guarantee the revenues that a power station earns for the electricity they export, and that allows the developers, financiers to go, okay, I know what my revenues are going to be, so I've got a decent amount of certainty over how much it's going to cost to finance this new piece of kit. And that's how they got Hinkley out of the gate. But you then also have another set of risks, which is around delivery, because you don't get paid that money until you've built a power station and are finished. And these things are very complicated and they take a long time to build. So the idea behind the RAB model is that instead of the developer taking on the construction risk, they start getting some revenues straight away. So that allows them to basically reduce that cost of capital even further. So I think in the impact assessment, Bayes is saying that the hurdle rate, which is the kind of internal rate of return that you need to jump over to consider the development a good idea, it goes from 9% under a CFD to roughly 4%, 4 to 6% under RAB. And the hurdle rate is one of the big determinants of cost in a levelized cost of energy calculation.
There's a few things I think we should explain there. So, I mean, hurdle rate specifically. So that means, so for a given investment, that is the specific rate of return that would be required to make that investment worthwhile. And it'll differ depending on how risky the investment is. So what you said under the CFD, it was around 9%. And now that's brought down. So that's basically investors are seeing this as a more secure
You can get different types of investors.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if your project is less risky, you're able to get on, you know, like pension funds, people who've got lots of capital but can't take big risks. So you can basically change the makeup of the money that you're using to finance your project. But the big downside is that the construction risk is shared across more parties. So that's the, whereas in the CFD, it's just on the person building it. In RAB, the consumer, because they stop paying for it earlier, takes on more of that risk that's what allows the cost of capital to come down.
And so last week we spoke about the revenue mechanism or the incentive mechanism for National Grid, the TSO, and that was the RIIO, the revenues plus income plus innovation equals outputs mechanism. And that's a form of RAB, right?
Yes, that's exactly right, yeah. So you're basically saying, this is what I want to build, this is how I think I'll build it, and then your regulator or whoever has decided to, you know, who's governing this contract will decide how much money you can recover each year to meet your expected hurdle rates. So the money that you earn is based on that. What do I need to meet my minimum hurdle rates kind of adjustment so that this project works?
And is it fair to say, like, RAB is more almost like an open book kind of process with the regulator or the regulating party, where you're kind of saying, right, these are my costs, this is what I plan to do. You know, it's more of a collaborative sort of thing compared to the contract for difference, where I suppose at its simplest, you're just saying, here's a fixed price that we'll guarantee you for the energy that you produce once you've built your generator and start producing.
It certainly is in the networks.
Mm.
Yeah, that's definitely how it works in the networks, is that they you know, come out with their plans for what they want to do, and then they have a back and forth with the regulator arguing over things like cost of capital assumptions and expansion costs and what, you know, what bits of the plan that they want to put in or want to take out. Presumably that will also be there in the case of the nuclear power stations, although presuming to a lesser extent, because it's a less complicated project in that you don't have to, you know, you're not judging about, it's a power station, it has to be there at a certain time and do certain things. Mm. It's not like a network that may be dependent on lots of other stuff happening all around it. I think the other thing, the interesting thing they noted was that they reckon that nuclear power stations under a RAB model will be more flexible than under the CFD.
Mm.
In the CFD, you only get paid for all the megawatt hours you produce. So if you produce a megawatt hour, you get the payment, whereas under the RAB, you get paid no matter what you do. So you, theoretically, your nuclear power station can flex up and down a lot more.
Mm. And I mean, again, effectively, the CFD that we used to offer nuclear plant or new nuclear plant is broadly, obviously with some differences, the same as the CFD that people might be familiar with for the, you know, for renewables, for wind, that kind of thing.
I mean, there are a bunch of redacted bits that we can't see.
Yeah, and I'm sure nuclear plant may not be as complicated as networks, but I'd say they're more complicated than wind.
Yeah, so the key difference was like the length. So I think the CFD for your wind farm is 15 years, but for Hinkley was 35.
The index price was also different, wasn't it?
I think there was a... Yeah, the indexation was different, and there's also a mechanism by which, if Sizewell C gets built, the price that Hinkley gets paid goes down. Because it was supposed to be an incentive for government to sign off on Sizewell C. Because, hey, if you just build one of these, it's more expensive. What's one of the other things about nuclear power stations is, ideally, if you're going to build them, you want to build a big fleet of them. So that you lower so even though the first one's really expensive, the last one will be cheaper because A, you've got a trained workforce who knows how to build these things, but B, you've also managed to use economies of scale in the deployment of them. Yeah, I think it was basically saying, okay, Sizewell C should be cheaper because it's effectively a copy and paste to the next place, and we'll have learned lessons, we'll have a better trained workforce. So it should be cheaper. The incentive is, we want you to sign the deal for Sizewell C as well, because we want to build as many of these as possible. So we'll make Hinkley cheaper. But if you only build Hinkley, then it's more expensive because we're not going to be able to recover our costs over as many megawatt hours.
And so what happened to the plant that we're going to be CFD supported?
So only Hinkley is still a going concern. Horizon, Wilfer, Moorside, all of those, I think Bradwell, have all kind of fallen and said, well, we can't go ahead under the CFD. And I think Sizewell C is basically going to be the guinea pig for RAB.
And why could the previous or the other generators not proceed?
Oh, it's this risk they can't take on the... Well, I guess for the other projects, they were all... Were they Westinghouse AP1000s or something? So they were all first of a kind in this country. Couldn't guarantee that they would also have, you know, any follow-on projects get accepted. And they said, yeah, the CFD as it stands just doesn't work for us.
Which is interesting, because I remember at the time, or since then, the CFD, the reference price, or the strike price for the nuclear was described as being particularly high. But I suppose even in that context, they couldn't make it work.
Yeah, well, there was no guarantee that the government would accept a, what was it? They wanted like 160 quid. So I don't think that, yeah, I think they saw that the writing was on the wall. They weren't going to go ahead.
So we've switched now to RAB with the intention that this makes...
Well, maybe.
Okay, we haven't switched
still
to RAB.
Still got to go through legislation.
Government has indicated that it may wish to switch to RAB. And so broadly, the intention here is to lower risk for developers. And the upshot of that is that it shares the costs with the consumer, effectively.
Yep.
Or some of the risks.
Yes, exactly. So, pulling the risk over a larger group reduces the cost as long as someone is effectively governing that person doing the thing, you know, as long as they deliver on time and costs are kept as low as possible, which would be the role of, I don't know, the governance of however this is governed. I think they're talking about there maybe a company set up to recover the costs, and presumably they might have some powers about withholding revenues if, you know, milestones aren't reached or something. But I guess that's just going to be secondary legislation by the Secretary of State.
And do we have any nuclear targets in GB?
Nope. There's no kind of target like there is for offshore wind.
And interconnection.
Is there a target for interconnection?
Yep, 18 gigs by 2030. So there's no specific target for nuclear. Do you think that's going to come? Or, like, how will government determine who can get one of these RAB support schemes for nuclear plant?
I think it will come down to the companies that want to come forward who can offer a project.
Because there's not many, right? Turns out nuclear is pretty specialised.
pretty difficult to do.
Yeah.
As far as I'm aware, there isn't like a target. The other thing is that it's being framed quite a lot as a hedge. Mm. So, you know, it's a hedge against high gas prices.
High emissions as well.
High emissions, and it's stable power, firm power source. So, you know, it does a lot of... and the obvious national security implications that helps. I'd be interested to see if this where this fits in with SMRs, the small modular reactors. They are in the hundreds of megawatts. So a conventional nuclear power station is, you're talking about 500 to 1,000 megawatts a unit. Whereas a small modular reactor, we're probably talking in about the 50. I'd say nothing smaller than 50 is a small modular reactor, up to hundreds of megawatts in the kind of scale that you would attach to a submarine or an aircraft carrier, which, you know, as we have a domestic nuclear submarine business, there are companies in this country that have expertise. So could you string these, you know, small reactors that are maybe hundreds of megawatts in size next to the existing nuclear sites to expand their capacity out? Would they also get RAB, or would you fund them in a more conventional, maybe CFD, or, well, could they even be merchant? Probably not.
Why would you take a different approach for those assets?
Well, because they're not as, whether or not they aren't as, I mean, we don't know, because these are typically put in defence applications, so they're not, you know, market bits of kit. Maybe the first couple you would have some form of innovation support or funding, but once you've developed the ability to build them at scale, does each individual one need a RAB contract? Probably not.
Then why do we need RAB at all? Why can't we just get a load of them?
Oh, because we can't build them yet.
Technology's not advanced
yet. We don't know yet. Nuclear reactors have been around for a long time. you put them in submarines for a while. That's what we're talking about. Nobody's just built a factory to churn them out yet, though. So they probably work, but whether or not they work commercially is another question. And then the only other option, which is essentially what we're saying, is let's just hedge our bets a bit, because the only option that we have that isn't wind farms, solar interconnectors, that we know works, is nuclear power stations, big ones. Because CCUS might not work. We don't know yet. And direct air carbon capture might not work. So it's the only low carbon generation in town that, you know, maybe we should probably just have some on the back burner just in case.